Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the second floor of the Duncan Student Center, where we are back for another edition of Five for Fighting Irish, once Ryan Murphy gets his microphone plugged in. I'm Andrew McGinnis, plugged in. Alongside Tyler Reedy. I heard you there.
Maybe it's just the headphones.
Yeah, maybe it is.
Sorry.
great start for an audio-only format here, which is indeed what we have for you, as we also have some college hockey talk a couple of weeks into the season, conference play beginning this weekend for the Irish, and also, of course, the NHL in full swing. We've got some teams who are off to some great starts, some teams who are disappointing, and well, then there's the San Jose Sharks, folks.
Yeah, what? I woke up this morning and I was like, what happened? 10-1.
Honestly, I'm surprised it didn't happen sooner.
I have a good friend in my dorm who's a Sharks fan, and I was talking to him after Sunday Mass, and he told me that they hadn't won a game yet, and I was like, "Oh, I'm so sorry." Like, that is painful, and then to lose the way they lost to Vancouver of all teams, right? Like, jeez.
Vancouver though, low key.
Yeah, I was gonna say, if we talk about surprises this season, right? Vancouver's got to be one of them, right?
Yeah. They've had
a couple dominant performances. You look at that Edmonton game a couple weeks ago early in the season. I think they put 8 on them or something like that. Edmonton's been up and down, but man, San Jose, we knew they'd be bad, but to this level is a little bit shocking. I'm a little afraid of what that place is going to look like in a couple months if this continues.
Yeah, that roster, I mean, I'd say it would be gutted, but are there really many parts that people are going to want? I mean, they're almost going to put Kevin LeBanc on waivers.
I don't know how much more you can gut from that team. It is gutted.
Yeah. All right, do you guys want to start with the college hockey courtroom?
Why not?
I guess we might as well.
According to my dad, in our family group chat, it is National Love Your Lawyer Day.
My grandpa is a lawyer. I'll give him a call. All right.
I feel it doesn't actually say the date on the picture my dad sent though, so I'm a little skeptical. But potentially, if so, hi mom.
Fact checking in progress.
Yes, facts. So we're a couple weeks into the college hockey season. You guys are the two college hockey experts here. I am an expert of Notre Dame and Flyers prospects littered throughout the NCAA. So I will, for the most part, leave this to you guys and serve as the judge for today's session. Sadly, there's no gavel in here. I don't know why they didn't think to
that's
have
unfortunate.
One. Yeah, I know. I can bang this.
I think you could probably really see it anyways.
Yeah, I know.
Hear it.
I can bang this expo marker, which is going to be close enough. So, Tyler, why don't we start with you? Any thoughts so far? Does anyone truly deserve a number one ranking, or is this still kind of an open situation?
Well, I mean, while we're still less than a month in, I think I'd certainly lean on the side that it's open. But, you know, Ryan and I and you as well, Andrew, we all vote in the student media poll, so we have to submit a ballot. And
my picks are incredibly well researched, folks.
And that includes submitting a number one team. And this week, I was a little surprised by this. I mean, I knew it was going to be kind of an unpopular take to start with, but I thought there would be a couple more on this, but I was the only one to put the Wisconsin
Badgers
the
only
at the
one.
Number one spot.
I didn't expect you to be the only one either.
Yeah.
I didn't do it, but I didn't expect you to be the only one.
Yeah. One of you had him at 2 or 3, right?
I think I might have put him at 4.
Okay.
Who is this against?
I'm looking at
Wisconsin.
It up right now.
Gotcha. I think I had him high.
Yeah. I mean, because I think at this point, the only reason
at 5.
I think the only reason you wouldn't rank Wisconsin up there is because you're either worried about having them jump too far based on last week's rankings. Wisconsin was sitting in the mid-teens last week. Or you're saying, well, Wisconsin's played well so far. They don't have the potential that a team like BC or Denver does. They don't match them on the eye test. And that's just not how I rank teams. Like, Wisconsin, to me, has been the most impressive college hockey team so far. They've swept Michigan Tech on the road, a fringe top 20 team. They swept Minnesota on the road, and they've taken care of business otherwise. Not a lot of other teams inside that top 5, top 10 have have taken care of things on home ice. Wisconsin hasn't even had that many chances on home ice, and yet they're still 7-1 with only...
No, and those Augustana wins at the beginning of the year actually looking better and better the way Augustana played this last weekend against Denver and NCC as well. Yeah, I think my justification for... And I'm looking at my poll now, and I'm seeing I put them at fourth. I actually should have put them at fifth because I put North Dakota at five, and North Dakota has the head-to-head against Wisconsin. You know, the teams in my top three were Denver, Providence, and BC, right? And they've all played – they're all common opponents. I don't think BC and Providence have played each other, but they both have played Denver. And I was kind of looking at those three, and I was like, either Wisconsin's going to be number one and ahead of all three of them, or they're going to be number four, number five, and they're going to be behind all three of them. And ultimately, I just think BC has, while they've lost their losses to Denver, I think they've been the stronger all around. I mean, if you look at it, this is where I'm not so sure either, right? Because, you know, if you would think that a sweep of Minnesota at Mariucci holds more weight than a sweep of Michigan State on home ice, right? So I don't know. I wish there is, and this is something that I think is exciting for college hockey, there isn't a team that's really taking, like Minnesota from the beginning of the year last year really took a hold of the reins, and they were number one, really from wire to wire, it felt like, through by the beginning of November, right? Doesn't feel that way this year at all, really, and I like that.
Really doesn't, yeah. And I mean, I think it's gonna play out over time. I mean, that's the thing with these rankings. I think a lot of people are afraid to admit that these rankings can change drastically over time, and you can be proven wrong. You have to be ready to be proven wrong.
Totally.
I'm not in the business of hedging my rankings to, you know, to not make big jumps on teams that should make big jumps. If I'm wrong on that later, so be it. College hockey is an always changing entity. You never know what
you're
going to get.
Especially right now. Yeah. I mean, I think what I like to do, and I don't know, but I think everyone. These poll things are interesting because everyone has their own, like, interesting little process.
Yeah, exactly.
And I just like to write it all out and then see what I did last week and then maybe make a few adjustments. But when I did my first ranking, I had teams making jump of six spots and nine spots. And I think that's the nature of the season until really you get into conference play in January. I think you're right. The team that I'm interested in looking at, I loved what Cornell did last weekend against UMD.
I'm just glad those teams are playing now.
I know. It's so much easier to talk about college hockey as a whole once those teams are finally playing. But
babies.
Yeah, Cornell's going to be the big one for me. I'm curious what they're going to do this year. I really am, because I felt like that was a statement last weekend. I'm not sure how good UMD is. I think they're another team with some question marks. It'll be interesting to follow them. That's a team that I'm watching. I don't know if you have an eye on a specific team that you're still like, maybe they're going to break out at some point.
Yeah. I mean, I've been all over the Big Ten so far. You know, trying to figure out what the ceiling is of Michigan. They're certainly starting to make a climb, especially after that dominant effort against Lindenwood, a team that Ohio State had some problems with. But yeah, Cornell, I'm looking at their upcoming schedule. You're right. They've got a chance to run the table a little bit here. I mean, you look at Yale, at Brown versus Dartmouth versus Harvard for their next four. That's a chance for something close to a 6-0 start. And then you go at Quinnipiac and versus BU later on to end the month. So they'll get tested, but it's going to be fun to watch them. They've got a chance to maybe creep toward that top five if they get some help very early on here.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think I like moaned and groaned all last year about Quinnipiac, right? About, oh, they're not that good. They're playing nobody. Their strength of schedule is terrible, and I still stand by that. But they won the national championship at the end of the year, and partially. Maybe because they had a, you know, little bit of a lighter schedule conference-wise, right? ECAC being what it is. You know, maybe Cornell is a team that's up for that spot again this year, where they're going to be better at the end of the year than expected because ECAC is still maybe not so great.
Go Big Red.
We'll see.
Yeah. So you guys have talked about who you think should be number one so far based on first couple weeks of action. Or first week, if you're in the Ivy League, who do you think is going to be number one at the end of the season? Regular season, I'm not talking about national champion. Who's going to finish the season going into the NCAA tournament at number one?
That's a different question.
I know. That's why I'm asking.
And it's not how I think we should be ranking teams. But it's a good question to ask.
No, I'm not saying it should be.
Yeah, exactly.
I still think I tend towards Minnesota. I just one of Minnesota or Denver. But I don't know. I don't think Minnesota's necessarily the most. Last year, it felt like they were both the most skilled team and in the country, and the team that, you know, played, for lack of a better term, played the game the right way. You know, best in the country, best all around team. I'm not sure they can say that they're the most skilled team in the country anymore. But when I think when Bob Motzko has his guys playing the way they can play, you know, with guy like Jimmy Snuggerud, like they have all it takes to be number one and be rock solid all the way through four lines and 3D pairings. So, and Justin Close is good, to say the least. But I'd have to go with Minnesota. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I'll take Denver here. Boston College is the current number one right now, but I think Denver's a little more proven as far as track record goes right now, and certainly a little bit of an older team than BC with that stacked freshman class. And we'll see how far those youngsters can take Boston College, but I think Denver's off to a strong start. You know, they've already been challenged a couple times. You look at that weekend with Boston College and Providence, you know, getting a split out of that, a couple one goal games. So they're already playing tough ones, and I think that they're gonna hold on to it. It's gonna be tight, as you said. I think Michigan could certainly make a push there. There it seems the most well positioned Big Ten team to do so. Obviously Minnesota is gonna be in great shape by the end of the year, as always. We don't know what the ceiling is on Wisconsin just yet. Providence is still knocking on the door, and certainly a team like BU could get back into the fold with all the talent on that roster. But I'll take Denver coming out of the NCHC.
The thing about the two Boston teams, like, they're just so young.
Yeah.
Like, they're just – and I think we, being, you know, students but also media members out at the University of Notre Dame, like, we watch a lot of Western America. Like, it's Midwest, but yeah, for the sake of college hockey, it's the West. Like, we watch a lot of Western hockey, and Western hockey is, you're typically older and you're typically more, you know, you do the veteran things pretty well. And look at Minnesota, Michigan, you're also pretty skilled, right? Like, they have no leg up in the skill category either. So that's what, you know, shies me away from thinking. I think they certainly have the skill to be number one teams at the end of the year. I just don't think they have the veteran leadership to hold on to a spot like that. But we'll see. You know, teams surprise us, like New Hampshire, for example.
New Hampshire.
But
yeah.
We'll see.
Shout out UNH.
That we shall. Also, I want to ask about Notre Dame quickly. Irish coming off a big sweep last week against Mercyhurst. Tight game to start the series, and then a nice, comfortable win in the second game. You know, I might be shocking to people here, but Notre Dame is actually not the number one team in the country.
No.
Yeah, and I don't think they're going to get there this season. But I want to ask you guys, what is, like, the realistic ceiling for this Notre Dame team? How high could they go in the rankings if everything goes
question.
Right?
I think that's what we're all trying to figure out.
I know, right?
I think that's kind of what's exciting about this team is, I think with Ryan Bischel, you have a floor, right?
Definitely.
Now, the floor could be seventh in the Big Ten, but the Big Ten is the best.
It's good seventh in the Big Ten.
Right, and you could still be in the top, you know, 25 of teams in the country and be seventh in the Big Ten, you know? But what is the ceiling?
I mean, I think that the floor is definitely kind of like last year, where you're kind of sitting right on the edge of or outside the rankings, probably outside the rankings the whole time. And then, as opposed to last year, you have to go on the road for the Big Ten and you have to make another crazy run at the end of the season to try and make the tournament. The ceiling, though, that's difficult. I mean, we can really only measure the ceiling by the best thing this team has done so far this year, and that was the 4-1 victory on home ice over BU. But then coming back the next night and giving up eight, and, you know, seeing Bischel yanked in the first period. I mean, there are questions about consistency for sure this early in the season with so many newcomers on the team, but it was good to see them certainly put their foot in the ground last Friday night after that overtime game with Mercyhurst Thursday and say, enough's enough, we're going to beat you 5-0 and finally pick up a sweep. But yeah, I would say right now the ceiling is probably top 15-ish.
Yeah.
I think there are kind of some tiers in college hockey right now, and that one seems pretty exploitable. There are a lot of moving pieces in that range of the rankings. Look at Arizona State and Omaha and Minnesota State. Nobody really knows where to put them right now. So I think if you play well enough and pick up some wins, especially early in the Big Ten, you could try and crack that. But I don't know if I see it going much further than that.
No, I go ahead.
Oh, no, I was not going to say anything.
I would agree with that. I think top 15 is you know, the one thing about competing in the Big – two things. The first thing is, like, you look at the schedule, right? Like, you're playing all Big Ten opponents and BC until Augustana after or on New Year's. And, like you said, Augustana's not looking bad. Like,
yeah.
The chance you could play a ranked opponent every weekend but one the rest of the year. Like,
that's
– if you split – half of those, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's a chance you get ranked. Like, you know, there are so many. The good thing is there are so many opportunities for this team to pull off big wins because I think they're going to be playing an incredibly strong schedule. And the other thing is, you know, I think the team believes that their ceiling is pretty high. You mm-hmm. know, I asked Coach Jackson a few weeks ago, and then on the press conference this week, he got asked by Paul Capanigri. Big Ten analyst about, you know, the freshman class. Like, you know, when have you last had a freshman class like this? And he went back to the, like, the TJ Tynan team that went, you know, all the way to the Frozen Four, right? And, like, now, do I think this team necessarily is going to go to the Frozen Four? No, but they've done it before with a young group, right? And I think I wouldn't put anything off the table because they're a young group. I think it's, you know, if you're gonna talk about the ceiling, you're gonna talk about, well, can they get consistency scoring? Can they get consistency, like, well, basically scoring. That's the main thing they're working on. Special teams, scoring, special teams, right?
Yeah.
When you asked them after the game on Friday, like, what do you guys need to work on going forward, right? But I forget the exact wording of your question, but it went on like, it was like 2.5 minutes. Like, we need goals. We need power play goals. We need goals off faceoffs. We need goals off the cycle. We need goals. And when I went back and listened to it, it didn't hit me in the moment. When I went back and listened to it, my reaction was, no way, Jeff. Really? We need goals. Yeah, of course we need goals. We need goals in all those ways. That's how you score goals. There are only so many ways to score goals, right? It made me laugh. But all that's to say, you know, I'm an eternal optimist. You guys know that. Like, I come out at the beginning of the football season and say, oh, we're going for it all, right? Like, I don't think this Notre Dame hockey team's going for it all. But I think what's so fun about it is We don't know, and I don't think anything's off the table with a young group like that.
And to your point, Ryan, if there's one thing we know this Notre Dame hockey team can do based on last year, it's pick up a split.
Yeah.
It's pick up a split. And you know what? The interesting thing is, like, they're picking up splits in different ways than they did last year, right? Like, it's last year was so consistent. You'd lose the first game, you'd win the second one. It just felt like it was ridiculous. Like, or then they'd start winning the first game and losing the second one. I forget which one it was, but it felt like it was very...
It was lose the first, win the
second
for the longest time.
Lose the first, win the second one, right?
Yeah.
And this year, if you look at their splits, they're all kind of different. Like, they won the first one against BU, they lost the first one against Clarkson, and they swept Mercyhurst, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I like that it's not a pattern so far, and I hope we don't get to a place where it's a pattern so far, because that was...
Yeah, they variety is the spice of life, folks.
They didn't win the opener of a Big Ten series until, I think it was January 13th, that Minnesota series at the end of break last year. I remember it was like...
You're right.
I remember sitting in that press conference room and it was like, oh, finally. But, yeah, is it Cappy and Ben holding on the call this weekend?
Only Paul was on the
okay.
Zoom, but I'm assuming he's with...
I hope it's
the
Ben.
Sunday game is a 4:30 start?
Yeah, Sunday's the
So I'm assuming
that's the
Big Ten
game,
network
think.
Game.
Yeah. Fun.
That'll be fun to watch. Those guys are good. So
yes, they are.
Big Ten Network. Give them a plug.
For sure. Any more college topics you guys want to discuss?
Not that I can think of. The one quick question for Notre Dame, I think. They're on the road this weekend. They struggled last year on the road. That is going to be one of the and they lost their first and only road game so far this year. So that's the only other comment I really have per college hockey.
Shut out.
Yeah. So.
Right. Does that mean it's time for my favorite time of the day?
I think it is.
Puck-toku.
Oh, here we go.
I got swilled in the grid a little bit today. I saw it earlier on Twitter, but I haven't filled it out yet. So vertically, from top to bottom, we have Lightning, Penguins, Blue Jackets. And laterally, we have Flames, Oilers, and 100-plus goals in career, which is an opportunity for some really, really low rarity scores.
All right,
100-plus goals career.
Yes. I'm going to start with Lightning, Oilers, Dwayne Rollison. Oh, 13%. Boo.
If you have a more rare answer than this, go ahead. But I think I have to say this because I love this guy at the University of Nebraska, Omaha. But Pittsburgh, 100 goals, Jake Guentzel.
Boo.
Shout out Jake Guentzel.
Boo. Doesn't count the 4 in a row he once scored on the Flyers in an elimination game.
I didn't know he went to Omaha.
He
that
did.
Got 4%.
Yeah, 4%. It's lower than I thought it would
be.
Yeah,
me too. Mark Jankowski for Flames Penguins went 2%. I'm going to put someone for Penguins 100-plus goals who I could have put for Penguins Flames as well. UC Jokinen, 0.7%.
Whoa. Who? What teams did he play for?
Pittsburgh.
Oh, my God.
I remember because he scored a goal in Game 7 in 2014 against the Rangers, and I remember the Doc Emmer call.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. I had one for Penguins Oilers earlier. Oh, well, I guess the obvious one there would be Justin Schultz. I'm not sure if there's someone I can think of off the top of my head would be better. Flames Blue Jackets. Man, I wonder who that could be.
Jackets 100 goals, RJ Umberg.
Oh, Flyers legend, two-timer.
I love that.
The Umbergler.
One of the greatest names.
No kidding. Also, the recipient of one of the greatest hits. NHL history, if I remember.
Boo. Hey, we see you still won that game or a series or whatever.
Oh my gosh.
Or no, yeah, I didn't know what you were talking about. I think you actually lost that series. That was Buffalo. I was thinking of Sammy Kapanen for a second, got them confused. For Lightning 100 plus goals, I will stick with a Flyer from that era. Simone Gagné, 0.7% as well. So I think it would go in for Columbus. See here. Could really stay with the Flyers. We can go like Jeff Carter. Yeah, I'm gonna put Jeff Carter. 3%. I'll take it. Blue Jackets, Oilers. Is Riley Nash an Oiler?
No.
That doesn't sound right.
I
know he was a Bruin.
Yeah.
The Blue Jackets are tough.
Yeah, they're tricky. The thing with the Blue Jackets, they haven't had a lot of goalies. Like,
not really. Yeah, it's been...
Or, because, I mean, they had Bobrovsky for all those years. Wonder how that happened. And before him, Steve Mason for a little bit. I know Pascal Clair was with the Senators, but I don't think he was with the Oilers or the Flames. I've got one for Blue Jackets Oilers, thanks to a YouTube video I remember watching. Rafi Torres.
What?
3%. He had 27 goals in a season once.
I didn't know he played for either of those teams.
Yeah, I just remember him with Arizona laying a nasty hit on Marian Hossa in the playoffs.
That's crazy.
I think he was part of the 06 Oilers team that went to the final.
No way.
I know he's definitely part of the Canucks team that went to the final in 2011.
Knowing you, you're probably right about that.
I could be wrong. I still need Flames Blue Jackets, though, and I really don't want to put Johnny Gaudreau.
No, we can't do that.
Yeah. Flames Lightning is tough. I thought I had one earlier. Now I can't think of it. Well, I mean, the obvious one would be Blake Coleman for that.
Mm.
But that would not get a very good score.
Johnny Gaudreau got 54%.
Yeah,
I wanted to see just how many people.
Yeah.
So I put it.
Yeah, I like to try to keep mine under like 50 or so. Penguins Oilers feels like there should be someone. I've got, and there is. Not putting Justin Schultz. Give me David Perron, another 3%.
See, that's what
I'm going to go ancient with Paul Coffey. Paul Coffey played for Oilers and Penguins? I feel like he played for Oilers. I bet a lot of people get that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep, 22%.
22%.
I just had someone for one of the Flames ones. Now I can't remember it. Shoot. Was James Wisniewski ever a Flame?
I don't think so. I was just throwing stuff at the wall here, seeing what sticks.
Well, I know he was a Blue Jacket for a long time. He was like their power play quarterback in 2014. Could there have been like a goalie? I don't think Hutchinson was ever on the Flames. The goalies, especially with Columbus, they've had a lot of homegrown goalies. It's not that they haven't had a lot of goalies, they've had a lot of homegrown ones. I don't think Mac Laney was ever a Flame. Oh, he was on the Lightning, but it doesn't work. Dang it. It's really unfortunate. Flames, Lightning, and Flames, Blue Jackets. Like Commodore was never on the Flames, I don't think. I'm pretty sure it was at least a Blue Jacket. Klesla. I'm trying to just go through like all like my like old like depth forward names who I can think of. Josh Archibald was never, well, he never actually played for the Lightning. So he wouldn't.
Another Omaha guy.
I don't even think he was a Flame either. I think I'm thinking of the Coyotes. Same with Rhett as well.
He was an Oiler.
He was an Oiler. You could put him for Penguins. You'd probably get a better score than Perron. Dang it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'd probably be like 1%, maybe less. All right. Should we move on and maybe come back to that as we think of it throughout the show?
I don't know if anything's gonna come to me, but
well, we can
if
just
we
say,
think of anything.
What are we missing? That. Flames Jackets.
Flames Jackets. If you don't want to do Gaudreau, and then Flames Lightning.
Oh.
Craig Conroy was never on the Lightning, right? Don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Yeah. We will maybe come back to this unless we really can't think of anyone, and then we'll just pretend that we forgot. Why don't we move on now to early NHL standings. Everyone's played about 10 games or so thus far, which is enough, I feel like. You know, we've reached November, so it's early. But it's not that early at this point in the season. Like, we can start judging teams. We're no longer chalking a bad start up to simply, it's a few games, give them some time. If you're having a bad start, you need to figure it out. On the other hand, if you're off to a good start, you deserve a pat on the back. So I've got the full NHL standings here. Why don't we just go through some teams based on the standings that I did not expect to see where they are. So first off, in the top four teams, Vegas, Boston, Rangers, Stars. Very standard. I think we all could have seen those teams in that list.
Objection. I did not expect Boston to be this good.
Okay, yeah, you know, that's right. I forgot about Boston. Yeah, do we want to start with Boston? Because they are 9-0-1.
Why not? What the
only
heck?
Team other than Vegas to have not suffered a regulation loss.
I'm going
to
get on my...
And their one loss was to Anaheim.
I'm going to get on my soapbox here. What the heck does it take to make this team die? I mean, like...
Florida.
Don't get me wrong. I have my. I don't want the Bruins to be awful. Like even as a Canadiens fan, but like this is my. Angry,
why not?
This is my angry Canadiens radio fan shtick right here.
Oh, wait.
We had to endure last season where they were so good, and now they get off to a 9-0-1 start and they lose like two of their best players. What do we have to do? I've been suffering in like we've been worse than them for like half a decade now. I'm tired of this. I thought this might be the year. Or at least next year's the year. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what they're doing over in Boston. I'm sad.
Well,
I want to cry.
Having Matthew Patra certainly helps.
Yeah. How does that happen? They've had terrible draft picks. They've drafted terribly. Terribly for the last few years. And then boom, the one prospect they call up, it works. How does that happen?
I'll tell you how this works. Jeremy Swayman in five games is a .954 save percentage, and Linus Ullmark is really slacking at a .939. I've got natural stat trick up here.
I will say I remember watching Swayman at Maine.
They are like
loved him. Didn't think he was going to be
that
good.
They are seventh or 8th in expected goals percentage at 5-on-5, just behind the juggernaut that is the Philadelphia Flyers, who are 4-5-1.
Oh, so yeah. So what are the XG? What are you just looking at XG?
Yeah, natural stat trick.
Where are the Arizona Coyotes on the XG?
They are just behind the Boston Bruins at 10th.
Okay, because last night I was watching the Canadiens-Arizona game, the first period. They said that Arizona was leading the league in XG.
Well, maybe they mean like expected goals four.
Yeah, maybe that might be it. But
no, they are. I mean, they're 8th, which is. I mean, obviously they might be using a different model.
Yeah, and maybe that was before last night too, or something like that. I don't know how much you could drop based on one game, but that was another thing. I wanted to ask you that because that's something we'll talk about later in the show probably. But yeah, Boston. Crazy.
Yeah, they've been unreal so far. Your point, impossible to kill off, except for those random 2 years in the mid-2010s where they missed by like one
Never
point.
Say die. It's remarkable.
And, I mean, I've had a lot of fun watching the one team that's beaten Boston in overtime. Anaheim Ducks are a fun team so far. 6-4.
Yes.
Troy Terry, Frank Vetrano and Mason McTavish are playing out of their minds so far.
Yeah, Vetrano's. Does he have two hat tricks?
He's
I believe?
Got two hat tricks already.
Yeah, I've seen some McTavish highlights up there.
9 goals. Leo Carlson's already got a few. He's looked good. Pavel Minchikov. I mean, that's a young team, but they've come together. Like, they're 6-4.
How about Ryan Strome, who was so miserable last year? He made the Dom Lucision on the Athletics. He's made his list of 10 worst contracts. 11 points in 9 games so far to start this season.
There you go.
Yeah. With 2 overtime winners. Both of his goals have been overtime goals, actually. So he hasn't scored in
That's
like an actual
hilarious
5-on-5 or even power play setting.
Yeah, I mean, the young teams out west, not named San Jose, have had some fun so far.
Yeah, we'll get to them as well. I know that a lot of people are high on Pavel Minchikov. Yeah. Defenseman. Very good prospect for Anaheim. He's hit his 10. I don't know if he was eligible to go back to junior, but he's hit the 10-game limit if he has. I know they've kind of been taking an interesting approach with Leo Carlson. He's only played 6 games so far. He's got 3 goals, so maybe he starts working into a more regular role, but I think they wanted to like kind of ease him into the NHL, which, I mean, given what we've seen from some other top prospects in recent years, looks ominously at Ryan.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're looking at me right there, and it's funny because I was just calling up the articles about Slavkovsky, and it's reaching an unhealthy level of debate over him right now. Anaheim was planning to do with Carlson, I loved it. Like, you know, you're acknowledging essentially that the European season is not the NHL season, but that you'd like to have him in the NHL, and you think you can develop a player in the NHL, which I do believe you can, but you probably have to do it the way Anaheim's doing it, which is, you know, recognizing the difference in the leagues and maybe going a bit light on him early on, you know? So I don't mind that at all, but yeah, I think Anaheim has handled their prospects well, and it's only shown me how not to handle your prospects. In the Canadians certainly have struggled with that, so.
Believe me, I'm well aware of how to ruin a prospect.
Yeah, I know, and it is a problem. Like, teams don't acknowledge it. Like, you say, oh, we didn't draft well, or oh, you know, we don't execute the right trades. But developing the players that you do draft, no matter how high, like that's what made Tampa Bay so good. I would argue is Syracuse is they develop their players well in the AHL. So that's one guy's opinion, of course, but.
Yeah, I mean, look at how many homegrown guys they've had and how many guys who are of those guys who are not first-round picks.
Yeah.
You know, Kucherov, Palat,
yeah, and a guy
Tyler
like,
Johnson,
a guy like
et cetera,
Ross Colton who played
Yanni Gord.
Right.
I don't know. I think he was undrafted, actually, was Gord.
Right.
But, yeah, so Boston at 2 in the standings right now, Anaheim at 11. Two teams I want to highlight in between them, Vancouver at 5. Sitting at 7-2-1, they've scored 46 goals, which is the most in the NHL, including 2 absolute demolitions early season to start the year with an 8-1 win over the Oilers, and then last night the 10-1 victory against San Jose. So they're sitting at 5 right now, and apparently they're looking to buy, like, right away. I think it was Elliot Freeman who had that in 32 Thoughts the other day, is that they're looking into making moves as soon as possible. They want to keep the good vibes going. And then speaking of a team who's already made some big moves in the offseason, the Detroit Red Wings, who had more roster turnover than just about any other team in the NHL, So far, so good. They're sitting at 6-4-1 to begin the year, and obviously have not made the playoffs since 2016. Vancouver made it in 2020. Before then, they hadn't been since 2015. What do you think their odds are of, you know, ending those long playoff droughts this season?
They look pretty good. They look all right, especially if Thatcher Demko continues to play the way he has. I mean, you mentioned what Swayman and Ullmark have done. Demko's got a .940 going himself in seven games with the save percentage. I know he was one of the guys I mentioned in our little contest last week of goalies to play 50 or more games. But this team certainly got some star power. We know about Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson, but what Brock Besser and Philip DiGiuseppe have done on that, on those deeper lines so far for Vancouver, I think that's really stood out as a difference maker and helping to build some depth behind those really skilled players at the top and create more of a difference in these games early on for Vancouver. We'll see if they can sustain that and continue to build around them. Let me see their schedule so far, how that looks going forward. It's going to stay pretty easy throughout the month of November. It doesn't really get challenging for them until those first couple weeks of December when you see Florida, Minnesota, New Jersey, Tampa Bay. So I think they've got a chance to hold pat for a while here. And if they can get this thing toward the deadline looking good enough, I think we'll see them make a little bit of a move. They're certainly playing like a team that should right now.
Yeah, the Pacific really does seem wide open, especially with a couple teams we'll talk about later who are really struggling so far to start the season. To make the transition from Vancouver to Detroit, what do you think about point-per-game defenseman Philip Peronic?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Have they found their Quinn Hughes partner?
I love the way Roenick played in Detroit, and I thought that was a good move by Vancouver. Like, his stock was down at the time that they made that move, and I think he's playing great. I think Vancouver's a team, like you kind of said, Tyler, we all kind of forgot how much talent they actually had. You know, like, there were a few years... just before pre-COVID, I think, where like people were looking at Vancouver and saying they're coming. You know, they're turning it around. The rebuild's kind of starting to bear fruit. Elias Pettersson's starting to play, you know, up to the level that he was billed to. And last year, they just kind of went away in the last 2 years, right? And I think based on all the negative headlines that surrounded the team, they couldn't win. We forgot that the expectation was that this group could win, and now they're starting to do that. You know, I'm still not totally sold on them, but as you said, they've got the talent that, you know, created those expectations. And if you have the expectations, the theory should be that you're going to win. So I'm by that token surprised by what they're doing, because I was one of the people who forgot about how good they could be or were supposed to be. Detroit, I think I'm less surprised with. I had my doubts about them and still do, you know, running Ben Chiarot and Jeff Petrie on a pair as they are. Like,
I mean, it worked for you guys.
It did work, but I've seen how it works, and I don't know if it's totally sustainable, right? But it, like anything, those are great guys if you know where to put them, right?
And they can just be holding down a spot for Simon Edvinson at some point.
And that's essentially what they're doing, right? Like, Detroit's really interesting because they're starting to win and they still have guys coming up, right?
It's a good spot.
It is a good spot to be, because, you know, I think as Yzerman has said, it's important to have your young guys coming up in a winning culture, and you want that. How sustainable Detroit is, I don't know, but I feel like I'm less surprised to see them start the way that they've started, because like the expectation coming into this year was, with all the moves they made, that they were making those moves to be better. So,
yeah, I mean, the Atlantic, obviously, we've seen a little bit of turnover so far. It still feels like all those teams are really tightly grouped together at this point in the season. Talking about another team surprising me to see here, Montreal at 13, Ryan. 5-3-2, not too shabby.
Yeah, they keep finding a way. You know, I talking about it being sustainable, they keep finding a way, even after the loss of Kirby Dach. Their worst game they've played this season was after Kirby Dach was hit.
Yeah.
They told the team that he was out for the year, and they came out and they never played the game and against Minnesota, and they lost 5-1. But since then, you know, I'm so impressed with what Marty St. Louis has done with his team. So, yeah, I'm hoping to keep the October Canadians vibes rolling into November.
So is Celine Dion, apparently.
Yeah, Celine Dion, great to see. I think that's her first public appearance in like 2 years.
Oh, yeah. I forgot she had that medical issue, right?
Yes. Yeah, very, very serious. So that was really great to see. But and it was great to see the Habs play so well in Vegas as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Arizona at 16, as our biggest fan, Jake Irons, enters the studio. I feel like a lot of people thought the Coyotes would be like at least okay-ish this year, so I don't know if 16 is outrageous for them compared to previous seasons. I mean, they obviously made some moves in the offseason. They, too, were very active. So I feel like 16 is like not terribly unexpected to see them so far.
No, I think that's
at
fair.
This point in the season.
If that XG was number one, I would be very surprised. Of course, we've discovered this morning that it's not number one.
It sure was number one on Monday night in that Chicago game.
Yeah.
Yeah, Michael Carconi with the hat trick. How about that?
The new Michael Bunting.
Yeah, really. I don't know. I don't know if I'd heard of that guy.
And not just
because
he used to be
night.
With the Maple Leafs or was with the Marlies. I don't think he ever played a game for the Leafs. He was involved in some like noteworthy trade, I feel like, with Toronto. I'm looking him up right now. Yeah, he was part of the Cody Ceci trade.
Oh.
He's originally acquired from Vancouver for Josh Levo. A little blast from the past there as well. I guess we've kind of been burying the lead so far as we get down to number 24 here. And the Ottawa Senators, who've had a lot of stuff happen to them since the last time we had this show. Obviously, they lose a first-round pick for not reporting Evgeny Dodonov's no-trade clause correctly to the Vegas Golden Knights a couple of years ago, which led to Vegas not being able to move him, surprisingly, at the trade deadline in 2022. And, of course, then they go around and fire their general manager, Pierre Dorion, who had been there for quite some time. Senators look like they've got a really good roster on paper. They haven't put it together so far this year at 4-5-0. They have played only 9 games so far, which is fewer than everyone except for St. Louis, and just St. Louis, in fact. They're the only ones still at 8 games. What are your guys' thoughts on the Dorion firing? Was that the right decision, or did he deserve a little bit more time?
I don't know about you guys, but it seemed to me like that was going to happen eventually, and it was going to happen at the first moment that, like, Andlauer, the new owner, by all accounts, is a guy who, like, wants his own people running the team, right? As most owners are. And it just felt like that was going to happen at the first moment it could, and this was the first moment it could. This is the first time he had cause to fire him. I thought Dorion got the short end of the stick there. He's built the team that he's going to be one of those GMs if the Senators go on to success this season or next season. Like, he won't be the GM, but it'll probably mostly be his team, so.
No, you're right. They kind of mentioned the idea of this being a last straw. I can see a little bit of that argument. What was it, 2017 last time Ottawa made the playoffs?
Yeah.
It's been a little while there.
It has, but I what I don't understand is sure it's a last straw. Sure, he's made a lot of mistakes. Like,
yeah.
You know, there was a time when he was the most beleaguered GM in the league.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that time anymore. Like, he legitimately rebuilt this team. Like, no, they're not winning games, and they've got a lot of bad headlines around them. But they're talented. They're gonna come alive at some point. You got to think.
Do you think that Dorion could be remembered by Senators fans, kind of like a Mike Smith or a Dale Talon in Chicago, as the guy who, you know, got all the pieces, and then they bring someone else in who puts the puzzle together?
It's possible.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I totally see that argument just yet, that oh, the pieces are all there and we're just waiting for some, because I mean, it felt like we were saying that for a lot of last year when DeBrincat was still there. Sure. And Giroux had entered the fold, that, you know, Ottawa was,
they got Chytrin,
yeah,
and then
Ottawa
got
was
hurt,
on the brink of something, and then nothing happened last year, so it's tough, but they've got to get better in between the pipes, that's for sure. Their goaltending's been not where it needs to be this year with Corpusalo and Anton Forsberg.
Yeah, as a Corpusalo fantasy owner, I'm not too
pleased.
Yeah,
you gotta. I mean, he's lightened up on the 5 goal allowed performances over
good.
The past couple weeks, but he's still gotta pick it up a little more.
Let's get that under 3, Jonas.
The interesting part of the Senators thing, I don't know if you guys saw this too, the Andlauer was complaining the other day about the NHL like withholding information about both those.
Yeah, and the Shane Pinto,
right,
as well. I forgot about that. Suspended 41 games for not gambling, not on NHL games. The NHL has been very, very secretive with what they want to say about that. And someone who's not secretive about what they want to say about that is Jacob Irons, who just had big smile on his face.
Thank you. I like to call myself our legal analyst on this show. I am in a suit.
Not a lawyer.
Not a lawyer.
But we're legally required to say
however,
that.
However, I do know a little bit about compliance due to Ethics and Sports with Brian Levy.
Be Levy,
baby. And I think you look at an interesting, this is a very interesting conversation that you start to have with these moves, especially in NHL arenas and NBA arenas and professional sports that are making the push. They see an opportunity to go get money, and now you have betting entering into the footprint, and yet now you're starting to see not allowed to bet on games, which I always find interesting along those lines of there are people are and there are spectators that are paying almost their salaries are doing it, yet at this juncture, players still can't bet outside of their own sport, which I find is sometimes very interesting.
They can't bet outside of their own sport? I think you are allowed to like place a bet on an NFL game, but there are certain restrictions.
It depends on the
because like
the
I think
league,
well, I think one
right?
of the things that came out with Pinto is that he was having like a friend place bets for him. While he was potentially in areas where it's not legal to sports bet.
Using
his personal account on DraftKings or FanDuel or whatever. On a related note, what are the odds we could get Shane Pinto and Shane Bucky?
That's the interesting thing.
He's got a
lot
of free
Pinto
time
thing
now.
Is like, they're not really
he's
going to
have a lot
us.
Of free time yeah. regardless.
They're not really telling us what it is. They're like, well, he didn't place bets on NHL games, but it's serious enough that, and unlike like the NFL is a very clear public policy about like where you can and what you can. The NHL is just like, be careful, y'all.
It's very much of like
Mike Jake.
Thank you, my bad. It's very much like the NCAA rule. I feel the NHL harbors of like just be careful, don't bet on games, don't bet on sponsored sports, and then we'll dictate how all the chips fall when a situation arises.
What could possibly go wrong?
Nothing.
So it's the NHL.
Yeah, it's a whole interesting thing. But you know, one of the funny things, and this is another like moral thing with the NHL withholding information from the owner Andlauer to increase the value of the.
Andlauer did say that. I don't know if he was being frustrated, but he's like, yeah, maybe they didn't tell me because they wanted me to pay an extra $20 million.
Which, you know, I don't know how much I sympathize with him, but he's got a fair point. And I saw a tweet the other day that was like, so the NHL was, you know, I don't know if you saw this too, like NHL was withholding information so that the value of a deal would be higher from the Senators about an investigation in which the Senators withheld information about a deal in order for the value of the deal to be higher.
I say,
come
we,
on, you
I,
can't make that up.
I say we dock the NHL a first round pick.
You're
off the clock.
I think you're gonna look, and this is from a guy with an outsider's perspective. The NHL right now has a PR issue. They do. There's no way around it. They have a public relations issue.
Is this true?
I think they very much do. They are not getting out in front of it. And this is maybe just because of how much more mainstream hockey has become due to ESPN taking it up. TNT
Pat McAfee show,
it up.
Baby. Bettman was on it yesterday
exactly.
or 2 days ago.
But I think you look at it right now that the NHL has a little bit of a PR issue because they're not as forefront on communications as you look at the NFL, which I think is a pinnacle league of being having communications out and being in tackling in front of issues.
I want to move on quickly here. I want to look at the bottom five teams in the NHL standings. Apologies to Minnesota, who's at 26.
What?
Yeah, well, I'll give them a minute to turn it around, mainly because we only have 4 minutes left in this show. And we're talking about three teams in specifics. The bottom five teams going from 32 to 28. San Jose, who, I mean, like, we just... I want to talk about them, but there's more interesting teams. just above them at 2-7-1, six straight losses after a 2-1-1 start. The Calgary Flames. Followed up is the Edmonton Oilers, who also only have two wins this season. One of them came on Sunday against the Flames in the Heritage Classic. Chicago at 29, Sarley Tyler. I don't think that's too much of a surprise. And it's like, honestly, you're probably fine with it, given the tank.
It's okay.
And then just above Chicago at 28, Pittsburgh at 3-6-0. They've struggled two out of the gates. Out of those three teams, guys, which are you most concerned about?
Define concern.
Chicago, Pittsburgh, and Calgary?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'll say Calgary. They feel that core feels rotten. And the problem with that is you have long-term contracts to Huberto and Kadri already signed. So it's not, I mean, you can trade Lindholm and Hanifin some of your expiring contracts and get, you know, a bunch of first-round picks and stuff for them. But it's not like you can do a hard reset there if that's what you deem necessary. And the Flames apparently stopped extension talks with Hanifin and some of their other free agents potentially over the last couple of days. So it sounds like they might think the same.
Yeah, I think I'd be concerned if I were Calgary too.
Poor Craig Conroy.
You're stuck in the limbo period where the limbo looking roster where you're like, look like you should be a middle of the NHL team, and you're in the bottom of the NHL. And typically teams that look like they're supposed to be in the middle but start the season in the bottom end up in the bottom, you know?
Yes. So. And I think they look better than mid on paper, but, I mean, obviously last year they struggled to get going. We were all told, oh, it was a Daryl Sutter issue. Well, Daryl Sutter is gone, and they're worse by a lot.
I'd also be concerned if I'm Pittsburgh, too, to be quite frank with you. Like, you know, they're not a team that's looking to rebuild, and
definitely not.
It just keeps the bottom keeps falling out.
I'd say Calgary would be my biggest concern. I think there's more long-term structural issues with them. I think the biggest issue at Pittsburgh right now is that power play not really getting off the ground at all with Malkin and Crosby and Erik Karlsson. It just hasn't clicked with them yet. I think that's an easier fix. If you're talking record-wise, I mean, there's nothing wrong with Chicago. Nobody was expecting any type of a playoff push this season.
Yeah, I meant out of Chicago, Pittsburgh, and Edmonton.
Yeah.
Fun fact, trivia question, who is ninth on the Penguins in scoring right now? Radim Zahorna.
All right, Radim Zahorna.
Rickard Rakell and Jeff Carter have played 18 games. They have combined for one assist.
Jeez. That's your problem if you're Pittsburgh, right? That's got to be your problem. You don't have any.
Also, Tristan Jarry is an 8.93.
Oh, jeez.
That's not it.
But don't worry. He's only under contract for like five more years.
Murray or Jarry will have no worry. I still remember those t-shirts, and they have not aged well.
Yeah, Chicago's just, I think for me, it's just kind of a one-player concern right now. Like, Lucas Reichel has to start scoring like a first-round pick should score. I mean, he got experience last year, and it's. Still isn't happening yet this year. I mean, I don't know if it's a huge concern yet with all the draft capital Chicago's going to have coming down the chute and the collegiate prospects looking very good so far this year, but Lucas Reichel's got to figure it out. But, I mean, that's really the crux of the concern there.
Finally, Oilers very quickly here. They've allowed 36 goals so far this year, tied for the fifth most in the NHL. What do you think about just, like, their roster construction in general? Obviously, you know, they've got McDavid and Draisaitl. It seemed like they had shored up the debt with some of the moves they made in recent years, getting Evander Kane, getting Matisse Ekholm at the trade deadline last year. It seemed like they'd kind of addressed some of those issues. But Edmonton's eighth leading scorer, guys, is Sam Gagne, who's played in one game. One. He had two goals.
And he scored.
Twice. He had two, apparently. And good for him. It's his first goal as an Oiler in the NHL in like over 1,300 days, something like that. I love Sam Gagne. I loved him when he was with the Flyers that one season. But what do we think about their depth as well behind Draisaitl and McDavid, who thankfully just got back from injury?
I just think they're going to get it going eventually. They're too good not to, right?
That's kind of where I stand. Their goaltending has also been a mess. Yeah, man. Stuart Skinner, 8-6-1. Jack Campbell, 8-7-8. It's not good.
No, and it hasn't been good. And, you know, Campbell was supposed to be the solution, but.
Yeah, and talking about some of the guys they were hoping could shore up the depth this year. Connor Brown, Ryan McLeod, Dylan Holloway, 9 games played each, 0 points each. Like those, that's not just a slump at that point. That is a crater.
It's just not good enough.
No, and I mean, talking about McLeod, who's been like a solid third, fourth line guy in recent years. Connor Brown, I know coming off serious injury, but had been a really good third liner before that. And Holloway is a prospect I know they're pretty hyped on. Phil Broberg has no points as well. He's a defenseman, so cut him a little more slack. But
yeah, I'm more worried about Edmonton's defense personally than depth up front, because I mean you still have McDavid and Draisaitl producing and Zach Hyman's having a good start as well. But
yeah, I meant depth in general.
They can't outscore what's going on the back end right now. I mean, reading up a little bit on the issues with Edmonton right now. Apparently Evan Bouchard's having a rough start. Edmonton's been outscored 9-4 in 5-on-5 when he's out there. So you talk about depth on defense. That's certainly a big part of it. But yes. Oilers just got to stop giving up goals, because you can't have the guys scoring a bunch of goals make a difference if they're scoring 5 goals in a 7-5 game.
Gotcha. All right. We are a couple minutes over time, so we're going to sign off. We'll be back next Friday, of course, talking some more about college hockey, Irish Open Conference play this weekend at Penn State, and I'm sure there'll be some more NHL news. We've had a GM firing, a 41-game suspension, and a whole lot more
team
in the last week. Thank you very much for listening. For Tyler Reedy and Ryan Murphy, I'm Andrew McGinnis. Have a good week, everyone.